case, Durr versus Swark. And we'll hear first from Mr. Rector.
Good morning. I'm Ken Rector from Vicksburg, Mississippi. I represent the appellants Till Durr, Kai Durr, Katja Durr, and Margaret Durr. If it pleases the court, I'll say at the outset of this that I don't believe that I have ever before been the victim of a judgment on the pleadings. In fact, I'm not sure that I've ever been involved in a case where anybody was a victim of a judgment on the pleadings, and I would suggest to the court that that's really not what happened in this case either. Even though I did not draft this complaint, one of my able young associates did, and I think she pled sufficient facts in her complaint or in the plaintiff's complaint to state a claim for relief and certainly to survive what the Swarks filed in the district court, which was a motion for justice for judgment on the pleadings. In fact, neither the district court nor the Swarks, the appellees, say that we failed to plead sufficient facts to state a claim. Rather, what I believe has happened to us here and the way we've approached this appeal is that the district court, although calling it something else, in fact granted summary judgment, converted the motion for judgment on the pleadings to a motion for summary judgment, and I think that is, in fact, in reality, happened.
You filed a suit in Mississippi to enforce the German judgment, right?
Yes, you're right, Your Honor, in the district court. We believe, Your Honor, that even if the case had been properly converted from a motion for judgment on the pleadings to a motion for summary judgment, we believe that summary judgment would also have been inappropriate or was, in fact, inappropriate in this case. In fact, we think that the Durrs are entitled to a judgment as a matter of law, and as you know, we did, in fact, in response to the defendants, the Swarks, motion for judgment on the pleadings, we filed a cross motion for summary judgment. You're correct. What we seek is a recognition of a judgment for cost that was entered by a German court in Mississippi. The Durrs filed a lawsuit against the Swarks in Germany, won that lawsuit, and in Germany, of course, the victor is awarded an order of costs. And it is that order of costs that we seek to enforce here. The issue then is there a basis in Mississippi law to deny recognition of the judgment for costs, which is what the district judge did. He granted the motion for judgment on the pleadings, denied the relief sought in our complaint, and denied the recognition of the judgment in the state of Mississippi.
Of course, the issue is whether. In other words, your client came in and you had a suit pending in Mississippi, and your client came in and dismissed that suit with prejudice against the Durrs, okay. against old, the senior, Durr senior.
The other side did that, Your Honor. The Swarks had a case pending against,
okay.
the Durr senior.
Yeah, that's right.
The Swarks dismissed, filed a Rule 41 voluntary, what we used to call a voluntary non-suit. They now, that's a Rule 41 stipulation of dismissal.
All right, so under Mississippi law, when you voluntarily dismiss with prejudice, that operates as a judgment on the merits.
That does not, in my view, Your Honor, and I think we covered that in our brief. We think that in under Mississippi law, a voluntary dismissal without the consent of the other side, a unilateral dismissal, is not an adjudication on the merits for res judicata purposes, and we cite those cases. That's our position. Now, the Swarks take the opposite position, but our position is that even if res judicata came into play in the German case, the dismissal, in our view, would not have been res judicata under Mississippi law. Certainly was not the German court was not obligated to apply our res judicata rules, is our position. What we and I will say, Your Honor, there's not a lot of jurisprudence in Mississippi on the issue of recognition of foreign judgments. We don't have the Uniform Act, as the court knows. But what jurisprudence we do have in Mississippi, I think, is very clear. And based on what we do have, we think it's clear that this German judgment should have been recognized. The opposite position taken by my good friends on the other side is that because they, the Swarics, non-suited the Mississippi case against my client's predecessor, the German court should have closed down the German case. In other words, should have just folded up the German case because the Mississippi case, because the Swarics dismissed their predecessor in the Mississippi litigation. Basically, what they say, what the Swarics say is that the Rule 41 dismissal in Mississippi rendered the German litigation moot or unnecessary or superfluous. And they say that not based on anything that the Mississippi court did, but based on the voluntary dismissal by the plaintiff.
Let me ask you this. If this had gone from from Mississippi to Louisiana, wouldn't they, under ordinary res judicata principles, wouldn't Louisiana have said this case is over?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think what they would have, obviously, well, Louisiana, it's a question of state law, and I don't know what the Louisiana state law is on the doctrine of res judicata, but I think the point is, had it gone from Mississippi to Louisiana, Louisiana law would have applied. The court, the judge in Louisiana would have applied Louisiana res judicata principles to determine whether or not the case in Louisiana went forward or stopped. Same thing happened here. In Germany, the German court considered the res judicata argument and said, under German law, it's not res judicata. In other words, our argument has been and is that the German court, just like the Louisiana court in your example, is entitled to apply their procedural and their substantive law. And when they did apply their procedural and substantive law in Germany, they said that the Durs were entitled to the declaratory judgment that they were asking for. So they moved forward with the case.
I don't read the German appellate court as saying that. I read the German appellate court as saying it's ambiguous under German law whether that Mississippi dismissal operates as res judicata. And so we don't need to reach that. That's the way I read the decision.
Well, and another thing that they do say.
I mean, do you disagree with that?
I really don't disagree with that. I think they're fumbling with it. If you read their opinion, it's a little hard to, because of the translation and everything, it's a little hard to really get a good grasp on it. But I certainly don't know anything about German law. But I think in fact, the German court does wrestle with the notion that they might be bound by res judicata. But I do think they ultimately do decide, and I think they say in their opinion, that they're not bound by it under German law. And I think where they come down is, if you read it, and they say this in a couple of places, I think they basically say, under our German Civil Code of Procedure, there was a way that the Swarics could have not only ended the Mississippi case, but could have ended the German case. They could have, if they'd have followed our Code of Civil Procedure in Germany, there was a way to, and I think we cited in our brief, I think it's section 307 or 309 of the German Civil Code. They say there was a way that the Swarics could have ended this over here, and we are entitled, of course, to apply our procedural rules, and they didn't follow our procedural rules, so we're going forward.
So there was no motion to enjoin, correct?
I beg your pardon?
There was no motion to enjoin the German.
No. There was, but there in could fact, have been. There's never any. And we argue this, I think, at length, but I won't dwell on it. But there's never any, what's going on in the Mississippi case and what's going on in the German case never crosses paths. It's two different things, and that goes back to the res judicata question, I think, Your Honor. The parties, in fact, in the German case, my clients are never made, in the Mississippi case, my clients are never made parties. And the issue of whether they're liable for breach of contract or liable for damages never comes up in the Mississippi case at all.
Well, they made parties. They weren't served, though.
Well, there was a motion filed to substitute.
Oh, the heirs. Okay.
Yes, but it was never brought for hearing and was never determined by the chancellor.
I mean, the way I read that German appellate court decision, the whole issue they're dealing with is their procedural rule 256, which says that there has to be, in effect, a genuine dispute to justify the German court from going forward with a declaratory judgment action, and that was the question they were dealing with, and so I read him as saying, you know, it may be that that res judicata applies, but it's ambiguous, and we would have to litigate that. So we go to the merits. We don't reach that. We go to the merits, and we decide the Durs would win on the merits. So either way, the Durs are the winner, and they get costs. I mean, that's. But the fight was about whether they were justified in going forward with the declaratory judgment suit. The trial court had said there's not enough interest here in the plaintiffs to go forward with the suit. I mean, do you read it that way?
I don't disagree with that, Your Honor. I think that's a good as good analysis as we can make of what they did. I do think that they, well, obviously they ultimately decided, and how they got there may be a little loopy, but they ultimately decided as to that ultimately the Durs were, and this is the ultimate question, that the Durs under German substantive law and under German procedural law are entitled to this relief that they're seeking, this declaration that they're seeking. Now, how they got there, as you say, they got there in a couple of different ways, but the point is they got there, and the Durs prevailed. I think, Your Honor, that we have to also keep in mind something, and I want to say this before my time runs out. We corrected this in our reply brief, but I certainly want to correct it. We gave a chronology of all of these events that I intended to be helpful, and then when it's got a mistake in it, it's not all that helpful. But we gave a chronology of events. I think it's on page 10 of our opening brief, and in that we incorrectly say that the motion that we mentioned a moment ago, the motion to substitute the Durr heirs in the Mississippi case, was filed before the German litigation was filed. That's an incorrect statement, and we state that wrong on both on page 7 and on both page 10 of our opening brief. What actually happened was that there was a motion filed by the Swarics to substitute the estate of Herman Durr in the Mississippi case. That languished for a long time, a number of years actually, 3 years I believe almost, and then the Durs filed the German litigation, and then several months after the German litigation got filed was when that motion you and I talked about a minute ago was filed to substitute these four individuals, these three children and the spouse, in the Mississippi case. So that chronology is incorrect, and I think it's important, Your Honor, to note based on some of the arguments my friends on the other side make is that we didn't, we were first. In other words, we went to Germany and filed that litigation to reach this declaration we've been talking about before anybody ever tried to even join these four individuals.
Let me ask you this.
And I think...
Was Durr Sr., the father of your yeah, clients, was he was an original party, was he not?
He was the original, well, he never was really served either, but he was named as a defendant, yes.
Did he make a general appearance?
No, he did not. He filed a motion to dismiss for failure to properly serve process. They tried to, and I wasn't involved in the case at that point, one of my partners was, but my memory is that the Swarics tried to serve him by publication in the Chancery Court and failed to go through the statutory process correctly. So that process was not, and a motion to dismiss was filed. That motion was never heard either because he was, in the interim, he was non-suited.
All right. Of course, if the judgment, if the dismissal operated as a dismissal of Durr Sr., then that would bind these heirs under all res judicata rules I've ever heard of.
Well, and I guess that may have been one of the questions that the German court wrestled with, Your Honor, what is the effect of that? What is this, you know, and of course the question of survivability of a claim is always an interesting claim. I've had some experience with that before, and those are always interesting questions, the dichotomy about what claims survive the death of a defendant and what claims don't. And of course, this is a breach of contract claim against their father and husband. Whether that claim even would have survived under Mississippi law, I can't tell you the answer to that because I haven't researched it recently. I have researched it in my life, but I can't tell you today. And I certainly don't know the answer in Germany as whether or not the claim would have survived. So I don't know that that's automatic, Your Honor.
Do you agree that to the extent this is a decision based on comity that we review only for abuse of discretion?
I think that's true. think that's true. And I believe in this case, if you look at, as the district court correctly said, you know, Mississippi has adopted the restatement of conflicts, Section 98, in that Laskoski case. And if you look at the restatement, it sets out pretty clearly, I think, you know, what the court should look to in determining whether to extend comity to a foreign judgment. And I think those four or five things are there. And I think that whether they followed it or not is the question. Whether the judge followed it or not is the question.
Okay, Mr. Rector. You have some time left for rebuttal.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Hennigan.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm here on behalf of the Swarwicks, and I'm here with my partner, Paul Ellis. We respectfully submit that the judgment of the Mississippi Federal Court should be affirmed. We are not contending that the Swarwicks, that the German judgment is not enforceable in Germany. What we are contending is that the German judgment is not entitled to comity under Mississippi law and thus is not enforceable here. Chief Judge Girola acted in the exercise of his sound discretion when he refused to extend comity to the judgment of the German High Regional Court. I'm going to refer to it as the HRC in my argument. Judge Girola correctly ruled that the German HRC had the initial opportunity to exercise comity for two independent reasons. First, because of the ongoing Mississippi litigation, and second, because of the dismissal with prejudice of all claims by the Swarwicks against Mr. Hermann Durr. The German judgment is not entitled to comity because it fails to recognize in its entirety, and thus expressly conflicts with, the voluntary dismissal with prejudice of all claims asserted by the Swarwicks against Mr. Durr.
Now, let me ask you this. How do you see the German judgment as being in conflict with the Mississippi judgment? As I understand what the German appellate court did is they said, we're going to pretermit this question of res judicata because it's ambiguous whether it applies, and we'd have to litigate that. So they didn't reject application of res judicata. They just said because of its ambiguity, and they said why it was ambiguous. They said, number one, Durr Sr. wasn't served, so query whether that dismissal would apply to him. And two, then whether the sons would be bound by the judgment in any event. So they pretermitted rather than rejecting the application of Mississippi dismissal. And then they alternatively found that the Durrs would win on the merits. So how is that in conflict with the Mississippi judgment?
The conflict arises because the prior voluntary dismissal with prejudice resulted in a dismissal of all claims against Mr. Durr under Mississippi law. The decisions, both of the Mississippi Supreme Court and this circuit interpreting Rule 41A, say that a voluntary dismissal with prejudice is a final adjudication on the merits and acts for and constitutes res judicata for all claims that were pled or could have been pled in the proceeding. That was the legal status of the case when the judgment was entered in Mississippi, when the voluntary dismissal with prejudice was entered, and it was entered, Your Honor, 20 months before the German High Regional Court acted. The counsel for the Durrs says that the Mississippi court never acted on the judgment. It did act on the judgment. At a hearing before the court, the judge issued a decision in which it specifically named the Mr. Durr and included him in the caption of the case, and it specifically listed him in the language of the court's opinion.
What court are we talking about now?
I'm sorry, in the Mississippi court. And this is 10 months. This is 10 months before the German higher court issues its decision. And the lawyers for both sides, and Your Honor, this is in the record on appeal. This is number 235. This is an order in 235. The Mississippi Chancellor issued an order saying that as a result of the voluntary dismissal with prejudice, Mr. Durr's name is to be removed from the caption, and his name is to be taken out from every reference that the court has made to him in the memorandum opinion and judgment that the court had entered. And it said it should reflect that the only defendant in this proceeding is Durr Plantation, Inc. Now, that also was prior to the decision by the higher court.
Was that raised in the higher court in Germany?
I don't know whether it was or not. Now, but my point is here. My point is this. The Judge Girola was correct when he said that the German court had the first opportunity to exercise discretion because of the voluntary dismissal with prejudice and because of the ongoing Mississippi proceedings, and that the core dispute, if you look at the Mississippi complaint, which is in the record at 159 through 161, and if you look at the German action, which is in the record at 121 through 64, it's clear that what the Durr heirs were arguing was that based on Mississippi law, not German law, but based on Mississippi law, there was no contract between Durr Plantation, Inc. and Mr. Durr and between the Swarwicks, because they contended that it was simply a contract to enter into a contract, and that was not a binding obligation. And so there was, the same issues were involved in both the Mississippi proceeding and in the German proceeding, and that's why the final adjudication, that's why the voluntary dismissal with prejudice was the final.
What do we do with the proposition that Durr Sr. was never served?
It didn't matter, because under the Mississippi Rules of Civil Procedure, even though they had filed a motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction, Mr. Durr had filed a motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction, the voluntary dismissal with prejudice was effective as to him under Rule 41. And we cite these cases in our brief.
I saw one like North Carolina District Court or something. I didn't see any. Looked pretty thin authority. Well,
the case on that point in the Fifth Circuit is Plain Growers versus Ix Braun, which is 474 F. 2nd 250, that a voluntary dismissal with prejudice as applied to one defendant is effective, even though other defendants have already answered and appeared. That voluntary dismissal with prejudice is effective as to that defendant.
As to unserved defendants.
As to the unserved defendants, as long as they have not answered and as long as they have not moved for summary judgment, and even if there's a motion to dismiss, the voluntary dismissal with prejudice.
Is that case in your brief?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir, Your Honor. It's Plain Growers versus Ix Braun. It's 474 F. 2nd 250. At the same time that the Swarwicks entered their dismissal with prejudice, which was 20 months before the German higher court judgment, they also withdrew their two motions to substitute, first the Durr estate and then the Durr heirs as parties. They withdrew those motions. They had a motion requesting to the time to serve the Durr heirs be extended to substitute the parties. They withdrew that motion. And as I've already said, the effect of the dismissal with prejudice in all those actions that they took was that Mr. Durr was out of the lawsuit. It was over. It was complete. And what Judge Girola said was that the German higher regional court failed to give recognition to the fact that all of those issues were there pending in Mississippi, and and the German higher regional court failed to give cognizance to the dismissal with prejudice.
Let me explain to me how the ultimate judgment of the German High Court was in conflict with the Mississippi Court. I mean, as I read what the German High Court said, they didn't reach the issue of res judicata. They said whether or not it applies, we would have to. The whole point before the German Court was that Rule German 256, as I understand it. They needed to find out whether there was any genuine issue there that would justify them under German law to proceed with a declaratory judgment action. So in that context, they looked at res judicata, and they said, you know, there's some ambiguities here. This guy wasn't served. What's the effect of a judgment of dismissal on somebody who's not served? And does it apply to these heirs? So that would have to be litigated. So we're going to the merits. Then they went to the merits and found that the Durs would win. So they were entitled to cost. Now, how is that judgment in conflict with the Mississippi judgment?
Because the Mississippi judgment had dismissed Mr. Durr.
Say again?
The dismissal with prejudice had dismissed Mr. Durr with prejudice. Mississippi law is that's a final adjudication on the merits, and that applied to not only Mr. Durr, but anyone in privy with him. And as Your Honor said during the opening Mr. Rector, all the law is clear that the Durr heirs would have been in privity with Mr. Durr.
I agree with that.
Your Honor, here is why the German, and I know that there are concerns that any court would have about the refusal to enforce a judgment of a foreign country, particularly a democratic country from Europe. And this can be decided on very narrow grounds. And the grounds are this. The German higher regional court took the dismissal with prejudice, and based on the dismissal with prejudice, in its opinion, it said that Mr. Durr is no longer a party to the proceeding in Mississippi. And then it proceeded to say because he is no longer a party to the proceeding because of the voluntary dismissal with prejudice, we have to decide whether the Durr heirs are entitled to their negatory declaratory judgment action. And then it proceeded to say that because of the threat that they might be filed here, that suit might be filed in Germany against them, that we are going to decide these issues. But, Your Honor, I understand why you are saying that the German court left the issues open, but it left three issues of Mississippi law open. It left the issue of waiver, because the Swarics actually came into the German higher regional court and said, we waive all claims against the Durr heirs, and we will not sue the Durr heirs in Germany. They made that filing with the German court.
But the litigation had been pending in Germany for 14 months or something?
It had been pending in Germany for approximately
14 maybe longer months. Than that. I don't know.
Maybe longer than that. But they had come in and said that that they were not going to sue the German heirs, the Durr heirs in Germany. They had told the German High Regional Court that, and they also pointed out that the dismissal with prejudice raised three issues under Mississippi law, which the German High Regional Court never reached. In fact, there were four issues that it never reached. It never reached the issue of service, whether the service was effective. It didn't need to. It never reached the issue of waiver. It never reached the issue of res judicata. And it never reached the issue of whether the statute of limitations barred any claims. And, Your Honor, it didn't say, you know, looking at the opinion as a whole, I don't think that it said that German law applies to these issues. It said, we're not going to decide these issues of Mississippi law. And we're going to decide, because of this threat of a suit, that we're going to go ahead and we're going to say they're entitled to their negatory declaratory judgment action. And Judge Girola looked at that and he said, wait a minute, there is an ongoing proceeding in Mississippi that directly addresses this, and there is a dismissal with prejudice that dismisses all claims against the Mr. Durr, and the German court failed to recognize and give deference and due respect to the laws of Mississippi in ruling as he did, because the German court should have gone ahead and decided, they should have given comity to Mississippi law, they should have decided those issues, but they never did. And that's the, here's the real nub, and this is why this case can be decided on very narrow grounds. And I've said it once, and I'll say it one more time. The German High Regional Court used the order in the Mississippi court as the basis for saying that it had jurisdiction over the Durr's action. And it said that because of the voluntary dismissal with prejudice in the Mississippi court, that now the Durrs are entitled, because Mr. Durr is no longer a party to that proceeding and has been dismissed, that now the Durr heirs are entitled to go forward with the Mississippi action. I'll say it a little bit differently. The German court used that voluntary dismissal with prejudice as a sword, permitting the Durr heirs to go forward with their German suit, but the German higher court did not permit the Swarics to use it as a shield to show that, as a result of the voluntary dismissal with prejudice, there were no claims that they had any longer against Mr. Durr or anyone in privity with Mr. Durr, because of the fact that the dismissal with prejudice, prior to the filing of an answer or a motion for summary judgment, under Mississippi law, is a final adjudication on the merits.
Well, see, another way to look at it, though, is the German court said whether or not this Mississippi judgment is res judicata and would bind the Durrs is ambiguous. We, you know, this is something that, you know, got these questions because of lack of service and whether the Durr heirs would be bound by it. I mean, if they weren't bound by that judgment, they would be subject to another suit. I mean, wow, that's the way they were looking at it, that was a legitimate concern, it seems to me. And why wouldn't it be?
It's a legitimate concern in terms of conflict of law principles. But what Judge Girola found was that comity principles applied out of the gate in Germany because of the prior dismissal with prejudice had already been entered, and because Mr. Durr, the German lower court had said, because Mr. Durr was a party to the proceeding, it's clear that the Mississippi court has jurisdiction over this action, and we're not going to become, it said two things. The lower court said that it's clear that the Mississippi court has jurisdiction over the action. And because Mr. Durr is a party to the action, we're not going to intervene.
Well, the whole battle, though, was over Rule 256. They just said because of this ongoing litigation in Mississippi, the Durrs don't have sufficient interest here for us to go forward with a declaratory judgment action. I mean, that's the way I read it.
The lower court judgment.
Yes, sir.
But it was a part and parcel of that was because Mr. Durr is right now a party to the proceeding. The voluntary dismissal of prejudice hadn't even been brought to the attention. That was a default. Actually, that was a dismissal without even an appearance by the Swarks, by the lower regional court.
So the lower court got it right in Germany. The higher court got it wrong. Did the lower court just dismiss the action?
Yes, Your Honor. And got it right based on grounds, based on principles of comedy.
Right.
Not got it right based on conflict of law.
Which is what Judge Girola
right.
Well, they got
trying to say.
The trial court said the Durers don't have enough interest under German law to go forward with this declaratory judgment action, as I read it.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's a fair reading, but it's also a fair reading to say that they're not entitled to go forward because the Mississippi proceeding is ongoing and there's an identity of parties there, and it's pending prior pending litigation, and because of the identity of parties, which included Mr. Durer, they were going to dismiss the action.
Okay. What's happened to the lawsuit in Mississippi?
The proposed findings of fact, there was a trial, and it went over two or three, I don't know how many months. I was not involved in the trial. And it didn't last that long. It was because it's before a chancery court, no jury, and they broke it up a couple of times. And proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law were submitted to the chancellor in Mississippi early this year being 2014, and there's still not been a ruling.
You don't have any idea when that's going to be, when that's going to happen, huh? You don't know when it'll be decided, of course.
I do not. There's a rule about it should be decided within so many months, but.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Tim. Okay, Mr. Rector, back to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have listened to everything my friend Mr. Hennigan has said, and I will respond to a couple of matters. First of all, I would say that he is correct that Judge Barnes, the chancellor in the chancery case, did do some housekeeping after the Rule 41 dismissal was entered by Mr. Swarick unilaterally. At some point, there was an order entered taking Mr. Durer's name off the caption of the case, off the style of the case. We don't deny that that happened, but it was not any kind of adjudication that was made by the chancellor. It was, the court looks at it, it's in the record. There was I call it a housekeeping order. I think all the lawyers asked that the style be corrected to reflect the correct name of the parties, and that was in fact done, but it doesn't change the fact that no court ever passed. The chancellor never passed. Of course, the truth of the matter is she hasn't passed on anything yet, but she certainly never passed on the liability of Herman Durer, which or certainly never passed on whether or not these parties that are before this court had any responsibility or liability, because they were never before the chancellor in the Mississippi action. And I will agree that according to the record in the German court, the Swaricks did make some kind of announcement in the German proceeding that they, I don't know the exact terminology used, but for the lack of a knowledge, I'll say they waived or said they were going to waive whatever claim they might have had against these Durer children and the Durer spouse. However, and that goes to one of the major points, and that is that according to the decision by the appeals court, basically what they said was that's not good enough under German law. That's not contractual under German law, and it doesn't follow German procedure. So those two points, albeit true, I don't think they change anything. The issue is, as I think it has been framed by both arguments now, the issue is, and Judge Smith mentioned it a moment ago, when Judge Girola decided what he decided in this case, did he have the right to do what he did, and that was go behind the German judgment? Under the Mississippi Rules of Comity, is there any provision that allows a judge in the registrant state, which is what Mississippi is in this case, to go behind a facially valid judgment to the merits of that case and determine whether or not that judgment should have been awarded in the first place? And that's what Judge Girola did. And I submit to you that there's no basis in law for him to do that. And of course, the basis that he did it on, frankly, is not, as we point out in our brief, is not even really a basis that's been raised by the Swarks, and we really haven't even talked about it today, but one of the main reasons that he claimed that he did what he did was because he thought that somehow or another the German case was intended to interfere with the Mississippi case. Well, I think there's just no evidence of that at all, as we've discussed this morning. The German case, as far as these parties are concerned, came first. But at any rate, what it boils down to, in my mind, and I think it's focused based on what I've said before and what John has said, is what happened here is Judge Girola took a facially valid German judgment from a court in a country that's allied with us. This is not a third world country where we're questioning the fairness of the judgment. This comes from a country that we would, under any other circumstances, I think would recognize the judgment. And what we did was, is we looked behind the judgment and decided, well, should the judge there, the judges there, those appellate judges there, I don't know how many there are, did they reach the right decision? Should they have reached this decision? Basically, what Judge Girola has said and what the Swarks are saying is, oh, no, they made a mistake. They shouldn't have reached that decision. They shouldn't have granted the declaratory relief. The Durs were not entitled to the relief they were asking for because of all of these other things that happened over in Mississippi that the Swarks have talked about. We don't have the right to do that under the principles of comity. I don't think we have the right to go behind the judgment, second-guess the German court, determine whether or not what they did was right or wrong under either res judicata or under any number of other things that we've talked about. I think what we are obligated to do under the principles of comity adopted by the Mississippi Supreme Court. Again, the question is, what would the Mississippi Supreme Court do? I don't think there's any question that under what little jurisprudence we have, they would look at it and say, listen, this is a facially valid judgment. We had jurisdiction over these parties. They appeared. There was a full hearing. There was a trial. There's no fraud. We would honor and recognize the judgment, and I think that's what should happen here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We have your case. Very well argued.